Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Prospects Overload presented by Prospects Worldwide. As always, I'm your lovely and talented host, Drake Mann. You can follow me on Twitter at DrakeMann4. And as always, I am here with my co-host, Austin Farmer. And Austin, it has been a while, hasn't it?
Yep, I want to say it's been at least a couple of months since our last recording.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really remember like the last time we did one of these because of school, and you had a bunch of draft reports you've been doing. You've been kicking ass with that. You can bleep that, but you've been kicking ass with, getting draft reports for us and studying the draft up in Texas.
Yeah, you know, it's more like the draft reports have been kicking my ass, but it is what it is.
Folks, I'm sorry if you do not like hearing bad language, but anyway, Austin, we're actually here on a mission.
What is that mission there, Drake?
We need to introduce our new writer, GCU bound, Adam. Adam, go ahead and talk about yourself and talk about what you want to do with your life.
All right. My name's Adam. I'm from Boston area, but I'm definitely not a Red Sox fan, so don't put me in that. But I hope to one day either be in the scouting department for an MLB team or the analytic department, just something, you know, that feels like it's a part of the team, even though I cannot play that well. But yeah.
It's okay, Adam. I had a 70 poo mile an hour fastball, so that's why I'm over here too. And I'm also 24 and out of my prime. So
I had a poo heart, so yeah, I couldn't even play high school ball there.
But anyway, we have a jam-packed session today for this podcast. We got a lot of questions. We're going to talk about the financial situation of baseball. We got a couple start bench cuts, which I know when I sent Austin the first one that I made, he decided to say F you to me, which is really funny. But anyway, we also have stat of the day, getting hyped for rookie ball, which starts this upcoming Saturday, which will be really fun for me, obviously, because I'm Arizona based. And we just have a bunch of other stuff. Are you guys ready for all this?
I'm definitely ready. How about you, Adam?
I'm ready.
Love the enthusiasm, guys. I was very, very enthusiastic. Love it. But anyway, so there's an ongoing, I say, debate going on around baseball. So the Los Angeles Dodgers just won the World Series last year. Then they go out and they get Roky Sasaki, Blake Snell, Michael Conforto, a bunch of other guys like Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates. They spent another like billions of dollars on players. My simple question for you guys is, are the Dodgers ruining baseball? And either of you can answer.
All righty. Well, I believe the Dodgers are not ruining baseball because they're just spending money to win games, which some people don't like because, oh, well, their team didn't spend the money to win those games. But in reality, you got to think about it. All these teams from LA to Pittsburgh have billion-dollar owners. They have the opportunity to go spend. And I mean, you look at some of these guys that they spent on, the contracts are not that expensive. I mean, Kirby Yates, for example, I believe got what? 13 million, 14 maybe. And if you're telling me your team, small or big market, can't hand that out to a guy, you're wrong. So I really feel like what they're doing is not that bad because they're just trying to put a winning product on the field. I mean, I can see where one would be annoyed because their team isn't signing the guys. But in reality, I feel every team can go out and make these purchases and they're just choosing not to.
That's where I am with it. The entire thing is that like it's bad for baseball when half the teams do not want to spend. It's like the Rockies. Like the Rockies are a great example of if they actually were willing to spend money, that team would be really good. Because especially any hitter in that stadium, their stats would be inflated. So it's like if half of baseball doesn't want to spend, obviously there's the one team's going to be ahead of the curve and be like, all right, then you guys don't want him, we'll take him.
Yeah, so my take is pretty similar to y'all's. I don't think it's bad for baseball. I think it's more annoying than anything. But at the same time, look at the Rangers. One year they went and spent all that money. They got Seager and Semien, and they got themselves a championship. So it's like you guys have been saying, it's not bad for baseball. You got to pay to get wins. And if a team isn't going to pay their guys to go get those wins, then obviously a team like the Dodgers are going to go and get their guys. But the only downside of it, really, where it's annoying, is now the expectations are so high that it's either World Series or bust, and Dodgers fans are going to get pretty crazy with it.
Yeah, I got two things to say. One, I'm going to touch on the Rockies. That team is pathetic with the lack of spending because, as Drake said, they have guys who can play a bit on that team, just not that many. And if they actually sign guys, they could be pretty good, especially if they're good hitters, because it's Coors Field. And shoot, I forget what the other thing I was going to say. But, oh yeah, I was about the Dodger expectations. I mean, they're what, 18 and 10? 19 and 10 or something? Yeah, 18 and 10. And I'm sure you guys have both seen it on Twitter. All the Dodgers fans going insane about being only 18 and 10 with this team. But I mean, if you look at it, 18 and 10 is a pretty damn good record. I believe that's a .643 win percentage. And the fact that they're acting like that's garbage is kind of obnoxious, to be honest. But that's just how I feel.
See, I think the one thing that kind of goes in hand with that is how much the media was hyping up the Dodgers about, oh, they're going to be the best team of, like, all, because I remember the media was like, oh, is 110 wins like doable for the Dodgers? But at the end of the day, they went out and purchased guys with a bunch of risk at the end of the day. Like, Blake Snell is already injured. Tyler Glasnow is already injured. Roky Sasaki has not been the guy that they've kind of thought that he was because his control has been really bad. So it's like, it's very, and they got a lot of guys that have a lot of injury history, like they're injury prone, as I just discussed with Snell and Glasnow. Tanner Scott has had injuries. Kirby Yates, I think 2 years ago, just had Tommy John surgery. Just a bunch of like Conforto. Other guys.
Conforto too has had injuries.
Exactly. So it's like they did go out and spend money, but they spent money on very high risk, high reward guys. So it's like we don't even know. I think Blake Snell was out because of his shoulder. I know Glasnow just left his start because of shoulder discomfort. So, and Kershaw's coming back, but his shoulder's like toast as well. So it's like a lot of their pitching is so reliant on their depth, which their depth is pretty good, but at the same time, it's just being tested early on. But anyway, we go to this part of the show now where we go to a start, bench, cut, and we got two of these today. And these are some of the most fun times because we have had some pretty big debates about it. And Austin, I know you hate me for this first one, but this is hurting me a lot more than it's hurting you because I have seen all three of these guys live and I'm high on all three of them, as you know, because I talk about them daily. But the start bench cut to start off is basically, it goes with like a rookie ball theme because only one of these guys didn't play in rookie ball last year. He skipped rookie ball entirely, went to low A. But start bench cut of Mariners shortstop prospect Felnin Celestin, Padres shortstop prospect Leodolis DeVries, and Guardians shortstop prospect Welbin Francesca. Austin, you get to go first.
Yeah, like you said, you never shut up about these guys. You constantly talk about them. But I do remember I saw Welbin last year at ACL, and I believe he had 4 hits and was like, what, a home run shy of the cycle? But for this exercise, I'm going to start Felnin. I really love his overall skill set. I don't know if well-rounded is the better word or better term to describe him, but I think he has a higher ceiling and safer floor compared to the other two. And I do really love Leo's bat, and I'm not knocking him, but I think I like Felnin a little bit more. So I'm going to start Feldman, bench Leo, and then I'm going to go ahead and cut Welbin. It's not that I think he's a bad prospect by any means. It's not taking away from him. He has the least amount of power amongst this group, and in this day and age, you really got to have some kind of power. And while I do think that his hit tool is really good, I think that his lack of power would probably get him off a team if you had Leo and Feldman ahead of him.
That's very interesting, and I'll put my thoughts last because, like I said, I've seen them live. So, Adam, what are your thoughts here?
I want to start off just like Austin said. All three guys are fantastic prospects with their hit tool, and I'm as well going to cut Francisco. And my reasoning for that is not just his power is lackluster compared to the other two. I think he's less versatile because he's a 5'8 shortstop. I'm not saying he can't play shortstop at 5'8, but I'm saying odds are he's going to get moved to second base, while the others can play really anywhere in the infield, third, short, even second, too, because they're both, I think, 6'1". And then I think I'm going to be boring here, and I'm going to bench Celestin and start DeVries. I just feel like DeVries has really brought every tool possible stateside. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He's putting it over the fence. Yeah, it's high A baseball, but he's 18 years old and he's tearing the cover off the ball. Celestin's he's been good, but he hasn't done what DeVries done yet. And he's a year older. So that's why I'm going to choose Leo DeVries to start here.
I really like that. That just what you were talking about with Welbin, because with me, when I saw Welbin, he did play second a fair amount, and they had a shortstop who I'm extremely high on, which Austin knows, named Jonathan Martinez. He was playing short as well, and they were kind of like interchanging. Welbin would play short sometimes, Jonathan Martinez would play second, and vice versa. But for me, all three of these guys are switch hitting shortstops. Two of the three are 19, one's 18. Feldman and Leo DeVries, their raw power is just insane. I mean, it's effortless. Whenever Feldman would hit a bomb or Leo DeVries, like the one I caught at Arizona Fall League, it was an effortless swing. But the big thing for me when it comes to like hitting prospects, especially rookie ball guys, is how are their at-bats looking in certain times. And all three of these guys, they understood the zone very well. They fouled off pitches. They literally did everything that they could to put themselves in a really good hitter's count. And they would not be scared of taking the walk. And Leo DeVries, I think you got to start him. Like, he's 18. He's already in high A. And he's excelling so far. Maybe not excelling, but he's showing that he belongs in that league. Even though he skipped rookie ball, he skipped DSL. He's showing people that he belongs there. And as much as I think Welbin and Celestin are almost the same prospect in a sense, I think you got to start Feldman just because he has the way safer hit tool and he knows how to just hit the ball to all fields well. And in my mind, he has at least a 65 hit tool. And that's not even, I'm not even joking about that. So, and he's the one thing that I will say is Feldman is very, he's also had a little bit of an injury history, though. That's the one thing to be cautious on with Feldman. Okay, so our second start bench cut, Austin, I will let you kind of say this one because you actually came up with this. So I will let you go ahead and kind of start and explain this one.
All right, yeah. So start bench cut round two is going to feature three power first bats coming through the 2025 draft, and the three are Jace LaViolette, Nolan Schubart, and Ethan Petrie. So I'm going to go ahead and take the reins here and start first, but I'm going to go ahead and start Jace, bench Nolan, and cut Petrie. And the reason why I'm starting Jace is I like his power. While both Jace and Nolan have pretty similar power profiles, I think Jace edges him a little bit. I like his power to all fields a bit better. And I think that his athleticism is overall better than Nolan. I don't think Nolan's a very good athlete. I think Jace, all three of these guys are essentially power only bats. Like none of them really have a hit tool. I do think that Jace while he's not going to expand his zone a lot, he shows too much swing and miss against in-zone sliders, and you can also throw him sliders low in the zone, and he's going to keep the same level swing path every time. He never makes in-game adjustments towards them, at least not from what I've seen. I know he's made some slight progress this year, but I don't think it's enough. He's pretty much power-oriented entirely. Like, he's not a guy who's going to try and hit for average. He's just trying to demolish the ball. And it could be said for all three of these guys, but I am going to go ahead and start Jace just because I like the athleticism better. And I think that the power does edge Nolan's. I think that Jace has 80 raw power. I know that it can kind of, some evaluators will think differently. Maybe Nolan has better power, but I personally think that Jace has better power. I'm going to go ahead and bench Nolan, mostly because while he and Petri don't really have defense either and aren't good athletes as well, I think that I just like Nolan a little bit better. I've seen a little bit more of him. I don't think Petri really has much upside. I know that Nolan really doesn't have anything either. So this was a pretty tricky one. I think you really have to start Jace over the other two, and you can ask like 50 evaluators who they would bench versus who they would cut. And it could probably be 25, you know, benching Nolan and 25 benching Petri. But yeah, for this round, I'm going to go with start Jace, bench Nolan, and cut Petri.
Oh yeah. That's very interesting, Austin. Adam, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah. A lot like Austin said, I think all three guys are very high risk. And I'm going to go the same way he did with start Jace, bench Schubert, cut Petri. And my reasoning for that is I think Jace is overrated. I don't think he's, you know, a top 10 player in this draft, so to speak. He can't really hit a breaking ball. But the reason I put him at one is because the guy can actually play the field. And then Schubert and Petri are moving on the DH path a little bit, especially Petri. So I'm going to value the fact that I'd rather have a guy who, even if they're all DHs in the end, Laviolette, I know for a fact, will be able to at least see some time in a major league outfield. The other two, not as much. They're kind of on that designated hitter only path. And Schubart's just a little bit less of that. And that's why I'm going to go with him over Petri for now.
Real quick, Drake, before I let you get into your take, I do have one thing to say about Jace with this year's draft. I do think the reason why he is a top 10 prospect for this year's draft class is mostly just because of how weak in depth this draft class actually is.
See, you're not the first person to say that with like that it's like a really weak draft. Like I remember reading something that was something about that normally there's not a lot of surprises when the draft comes around, like everybody has a place. But then this year, like this draft, people have been saying that it's like, it's completely different. Like no one knows where anyone's being taken. It's completely different. So that could be because of how weak the draft is, or it's because of maybe how front loaded the draft is, I guess you could say. But I think for this, I think I would just do the same thing. I haven't seen a lot of these three except for whatever Austin has told me. But I will say something about Nolan. What's it? Schubert? Is that how you say it? Schubert? Yes, I'm assuming. Okay. So pretty much just by looking at his swing, I'm not high at all when I say this, but he looks like a pretty similar version of Josh Hamilton. That's very bold saying that, but just the swing and like the entire stance reminds me so much of Josh Hamilton, which, take that as you will because of the way that his career went. But yeah, I would start Jace, bench Nolan, and cut Petri, because Petri's just he kind of reminds me of Lucan Baker, which I hope it doesn't happen like that, but you never know.
I can agree that the swing is similar to Josh Hamilton with Schubert, but the bat is nowhere even close. I don't think that Schubert even really has an approach and will need to develop one. So the power profiles might be similar, but just there's so much swing and miss with Schubert.
Okay, so Josh Hamilton on the Angels, got it.
Oh, sorry there, Caden.
I'm sorry, I had to say that. It's just the truth. Angels put all that money out there and they got very little in return. So, yeah. All right. So now we're just because it is so close to Rookie Ball. It starts this Saturday, as I said. We're just going to get a little hyped for Rookie Ball and talk about some potential players that could be out here. And Austin, you know that I take this very seriously.
Yeah, the amount of research that you put into it the last few months has been insane. All the sheet or the giant sheet that you've shown me with all the names on it and all the data that you've put into it has just been incredible to follow, and can't wait to see your video.
Yeah, all probably 200 players that I'll get. But I love doing this because I get to see like players that not a lot of people will see. Like again, so and I also can make a pretty good judgment. I've been right a few times, I've been wrong a few times. So, but right now, the first guy that I just want to talk about really quickly is he has the most legendary name and he's perfect for baseball is Ichiro Kano of the Reds. That is a hilarious name for a player, and I really hope he's out here so that I can get a few good looks at him. And I think he is, because I think he was a 2023. A J2 signing, and he hit pretty well in the DSL last year. And Austin, I know every year, I don't know how they do it, but the Rangers have just this amazing roster every single year. And this year is no different. And I know that there's one guy you wanted to just touch base on really quick.
The main guy I'm really interested in getting looks at least through you, if I don't make it out there this year, is going to be Paulino Santana. He was a 2024 international free agent signing for the Rangers, and his bet looks pretty exciting. I don't want to hype him up too much just because there is a lot of risk with these guys coming through the system, but he seems like a pretty good athlete with a pretty good bet, and I'm excited to see what he can do this year.
Yeah, 100%. And with me, I'll be living pretty close to Surprise Stadium, so I'll be able to get as many looks as possible here. But I am very hyped for Rookie Ball, and I know, Austin, you're going to love all the footage I get to send you and all the editing that you get to do.
The months of editing following the season will just be such a joy. Thank you, Drake.
You're welcome. I could tell you're really enthusiastic about it.
No, I actually enjoy it because I get to look at all the video as I'm editing it and then post it on YouTube, watch it again. So it's kind of how I familiarize myself with the guys moving forward. So I do appreciate it, although it is a lot of work.
Especially in Arizona when it's, you know, the weather here gets horrible. It's either raining 5 pounds or it's 120 degrees. And I know, Adam, you can actually attest to that.
It's so bad. Walking to class and your backpack starts sticking to you. Oh, my God.
I've almost had 2 heat strokes out there.
Well, yeah, Austin, that was your fault for getting a coffee instead of water.
Shut up, Bree.
Yes, Adam, instead of getting water, he got a coffee. He got a big coffee and a small water bottle.
Dude, what are you doing?
Addiction is real, Adam.
Nah, you need like 3 waters at least at all times out of there.
No, I've learned my lesson. Now I bring like the liquid IV stuff, and that usually does a trick too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm a big Propels guy, so I'm always carrying those around out of there.
Drake is just a wuss and he goes with the body armor.
Yeah, I go with body armor and a giant water normally. That literally gets hot because it's 120 degrees out. But I will say night games for Rookie League are so nice because there's really no one ever at the game. So you get to kind of relax and just actually get a good look at guys and get different. You can sit wherever you want because no one ever really cares.
And none of those ball hawkers are at the night games either.
Oh no, they come later in the game and try to get the autographs of the players of half the guys that are probably not even gonna, you know, leave Rookie Ball. So,
and then they think they're scouts too.
That's a different conversation for a different day. So it's not we're not getting into that. All right, so moving on now to everyone's favorite part, which I don't even know how many people actually like this, but stat of the day is where we go on Fangraphs, or I go on Fangraphs, and I try and find a really interesting concept. And right now, I think that this one was really interesting in the aspect that a lot of the hyped up pitchers that we're going to talk about later are not in this top 10. And this is the highest K percentage across all of minor league baseball. So this is low A to triple A. So number one on the list is with Rancho Cucamonga and the Dodgers. And that's Sean Lynon at 54% or 54.1% in 20.1 innings pitched. Then you got Aiden Fuller. I think that's how you say his name. Also with the Dodgers and Rancho Cucamonga. And that's 44.3% at 17.1 innings pitched. And then we got the Athletics, which is very shocking to see. Seeing as how the Athletics have a terrible farm system, with Wei A. Lin, also with the Stockton Ports, 43.5% and 17 innings pitched. Hayden Mullins at high A with the Red Sox. He's with the Greenville Drive at 42.9% and 17 innings pitched. Number five on the list is Jack Weniger, which is double A with the Mets. And that is the Rumble Ponies, and they are 42.1% at 20 innings pitched. And I'm going to butcher this name, but also with the Athletics, you got Zhu Chen Sha, who is also with the Stockton Ports, 41.9%, 17 innings pitch. And then we got Adam's boy, Trey Yosevich, Blue Jays. He's a Dunedin. Is that how you say it? Dunedin?
Dunedin, I think.
Dunedin? Okay. 41.2% at 17.1 innings pitch. Got Jonah Tong at double A with the Mets. The Rumble Ponies, 40.5%, 17.1 in his pitch. Hunter Barco with the Pirates, he's in double A, 40% at 20.2 in his pitch. And Blake Adams, the double A with the Rockies, 39.7% at 16 innings pitched. Now, that was a lot. That was a handful. Either of you can go, but go ahead and just talk about the guys that stick out to you.
Is this the first time we've had three Asian prospects on a list like this? I think it is.
Well, I only see two. I don't know who the last
Asian. Yeah, I see two. Lynn, oh, is Jonah Tong Asian?
Tong is the last name, or Asian last name,
I suppose. Yeah.
All right. Well, Adam, if you want to go first, you can, because I know you said that you're your boy.
Yeah, I mean, there's two guys that stand out to me. One is obviously Yosevich, our first round pick last year. I say our, but the Blue Jays first round pick last year. I'm pretty excited about this, seeing he's getting strikeouts the way he did in college. It's a good start. It is, I believe, low A, but nonetheless, a good start. And then the other guy that stands out to me here is Hunter Barco, because I believe he's a non-top 100 guy. But I've always kind of been big on him since he was at Florida. I believe he's a 2022 pick. But I'm glad to see he's doing pretty well in double A. And along with that, the Pirates they don't have any hitting prospects, really. But the pitching prospects are pretty damn good. They're not really prospects now. But with Skeens, Jones, and Barco, it's not looking that bad in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Austin.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and feed off what you said. And the two main guys are also Yosevich and Barco for me. I think the reason why Barco wasn't a top 100 guy is because of injury. So it's nice to see him coming back healthy and being on this list, because I also liked him out of Florida. I thought the stuff was good, and he had a pretty good arsenal, pretty good deception in his delivery. And yeah, Yosevich was just filthy at East Carolina. So I imagine he should get called up to high A probably in June, maybe early July, and finish the season there. And yeah, you know, the Blue Jays have pretty good pitching overall, I would say, in their system. They got Tiedemann as well and some other guys.
It's kind of interesting, though, that the Athletics are on here multiple times. I mean, the Athletics has been known the last 3 to 4 years of having a terrible, terrible, like, international free agent class, a terrible farm system. And it looks like they hit at least twice. And I know it's a very small sample size, which a lot of these guys are not going to be on this list come the end of the year. But a little transition here, because you guys did a really good job talking about Hunter Barco. And
let me say something real quick about the A's.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think both of the guys on this list are Taiwanese, so maybe the A's are figuring something out with where they can tap into. Maybe they have a good scouting in Taiwan now, possibly.
That's a good point.
That's a pretty good point, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
They can find something right.
They missed on a certain shortstop prospect that was deemed one of the best shortstops in an international free agent draft, and now he's a pitcher, but other than that...
Rip to all the Bowman collectors.
I want to touch on Jonah Tong for the Mets, too.
Okay.
I believe Jonah Tong is probably... He's a likely candidate to take over in a couple major top 100 prospect lists by, you know, the all-star break midseason remake of the list or the end of the year. I think this guy is a top 100 prospect. He gets strikeouts. He's pretty damn good. And I believe he's pretty young. So I wouldn't be surprised if he creeps into the top 100 some point or another.
Top 100.
He's 21.
Yep, he's 21, and he's a 2022 guy, seventh round.
Top 100 for who?
I
like consensus.
Yeah, I kind of think he might. He's pretty damn good.
I mean, right now, at the K rate that he has, I looked him up because I was curious on him, and he has like 30 strikes.
I 100% think that Harlan Susana will crack this list because, you know, I'm very high on Susana. And I realize that his command hasn't been great coming up, but from the outings that I saw back in 2023, and I realized that was a while ago, but his command really isn't that bad. I think he mostly gets shaken up in the first couple of innings, and then he really settles down. But his changeup is filthy. I put a 70 on it. His fastball reaches 102, and there's a lot of zip behind it. The slider is really good. And the curveball, I don't know what the progress has been on the curveball. It wasn't that good when I saw it, but Susana 100% feels like the kind of prospect that will end up on this list just because of how great.
Yeah, I tend to think Thomas White will get back up there. I've seen him a bit. Same graduating class in high school. One of us got drafted, the other didn't. But the kid can really throw. I mean, he was throwing like 96, 97 as an 18-year-old. I believe he's up near 100 now. His breaking stuff, his curveball is unreal. I think it's pretty tough for this guy not to be in this top 10 by the end of the year.
Okay. I think the funniest thing that you do is that you're like, just the fact one guy gets drafted, the other didn't.
I literally was about to say that is the PWW quote of the year.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was really funny. But I think the one guy on this list that... Austin, I've talked about him quite a bit, and I know last year he took a step back in terms of like his fastball velo and his control, so that's what prompted the Padres to really sell him off. And I'm talking about Robbie Snellen, and he's a lefty, and what I've seen, his velo is back to normal. He's throwing more strikes. He's getting a lot more like weak contact. His stuff is back to where it was when he got in his draft year. And Robbie Snellen is one guy that I'm like truly, truly high on. And I even think last year or year before. No, yeah, last year I said that I would rather have Robbie Snellen than Paul Skeens. But now I kind of look like an idiot with that. But.
Well, to be fair, you look like an idiot naturally most of the time. So.
Dude, you were high on Sam Huff. I really don't want to hear that.
I put a 40 hit on Sam Huff. Don't you start this shit with me.
Remember when Sam Huff hit that like 513-foot homer?
That literally,
and everyone was going crazy.
That literally was the only hype he's ever gotten.
In Colorado. Let's remember that. All right. So moving on, we already had one debate about the Dodgers ruining baseball, which multiple of us do not believe. But there's another debate going around, and that's, should the Royals promote Jack Caglione to the major leagues?
No.
And because Austin, just go ahead.
Yeah, so you know, I saw Cags when he was at Florida, and while the power is really incredible, I'm not tearing that down by any means. Like, his power is really immense, that regardless of how his hit tool ends up, he's going to mash. But at the same time, he's not a good athlete. You know, Baseball America was trying to hype up a routine fly ball to right, where I realized that was a new position for him, but he looked very sluggish out there. His glove work at first is not good. And I know that you saw him at AFL and you can attest to that. But, you know, the Royals fans are making an argument that, you know, no one else is producing anyway. And it's like, people don't understand. You have to have a guy go through the system. And I realize it's becoming a lot faster of a process now, where guys like Dylan Cruz and, you know, Wyatt Langford only had one season in the minors before they came up. But those guys are so advanced that, like, they both have hit tools, and Cags is not. Cags is going to come with a lot of swing and miss. And that's another thing that people don't understand about, like, stats coming up through a system or in college and high school. It's like, you can get away with muscling a ball, a bad pitch, and shooting it the other way. But against, like, you know, 70 curveballs, 70 sliders, you know, you're going to swing and miss every time if you don't make the adjustment. And I feel like Cags, at least right now, if he were to get called up this season, he would probably hit under 200 and strike out at a clip right around 35%. And I think it's a mistake if they rush him. I think they got to give him a full season in the minors, and then they can bring him up next year.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think the guy is really going to hit once he gets there in terms of a power aspect. I mean, the power is unarguably one of the best, if not the best, in the minor leagues. But it's a matter of whether or not the guy can use that power by getting the bat on the ball. Yeah, and it's kind of becoming especially clear now that he's up in Double A. He's facing more advanced arms. He's striking out a bit more. And, you know, that's not really a huge concern in my eyes in terms of right now. It's not that big of a deal to me. But my bigger deal would be is if they were to promote him and do it in the major leagues, because I just don't get the argument of why he should be up right now. I don't get why people think that, because, yeah, their outfield sucks. Their outfield really blows in Kansas City right now. But does adding a 22-year-old who's going to strike out 30 to 35% of the time make it better? No, it does not. If anything, it might make it worse in a way. So why not give him the time, give him the year? He might even be ready for opening day next year, for all I know. But for 2025, no, should not be up. And I don't see why they want him up so bad. I don't think they must not fully get prospect development there, especially saying they have a long history of failure on prospects. The only one that's really hit has been Bobby Witt. But I think for the time being, the guy needs to stay in Double A. He needs to develop his swing, cut back on the whiff a little bit, learn how to hit these bigger name curveballs, sliders, etc. And you mentioned the clip of him playing right field. I want to see him play more right field, not because that clip was necessarily pretty, but I think if he can learn to play right field, it would help out this team in the future, because, as I mentioned, their outfield blows, and there's not a whole lot that makes me think that outfield's going to get a lot better if they don't really make him into an outfielder, for instance.
See, I tend to agree with both of you on this, like, obviously, because I put up a tweet like a week ago, and it just shows how streaky Jack is currently. With, like, he went like 1-for-19 with like 9 strikeouts or something, and then, like, all of a sudden he had like a back-to-back-to-back like multi-hit games, and then now he's on another 3-game hitting streak after going 0-for-4. And it's like, I saw something on Twitter that said, like, oh, his power should not be in the minors. And then if you bring him up and he sucks, you can just put him back in AAA. It's like, no, that'll just ruin development. Like, as someone who's a fan of a team that constantly ruined development, the Cardinals, I can tell you from experience, it will never work if somebody tries that, if a team tries that with Jack Aguilon. Is the power real? Yes. Is there any approach? No, not at all. So they need to definitely work on that with him.
It's also going to hurt his confidence too, because it's like, if he's back and forth between the bigs and the minor leagues, it's like, I realize it's early in his career, but he might not know like what's going to happen and what they really think. And he's going to get in his head if he keeps going up and down. And that's going to lead to more destruction of his development. And like, we've seen guys like Joe Adell get rushed to the bigs, and, you know, Adell has no hit tool, and it happens every time when someone is rushed, they end up not panning out.
Yeah. I mean, another thing with, the confidence, I mean, you promote a guy and send him back down. Sometimes it works for the better, you know, they fix what they need to fix, but sometimes it can really rattle them. I mean, you got to remember that guys like Cogs are 22. I think he's 22. And that can really rattle his mental state as a player. And, you know, you may never recover from it. Hopefully most do, but that's just not the case. It's baseball. You know, he's not 28 years old getting promoted to make his debut and doesn't really care if he ever makes it back because, well, he's just glad he made it. The guy has the expectation to be great. And if he's not great and he gets sent back down to Omaha, you know, he's going to be a little bit rattled to start at least. And I think preventing that is a pretty key thing for the Royals right now.
100%. That's very true on what everyone said. Like, I know that fans, especially Royals fans, are craving just some type of attention or like some type of like consistency, but it just wouldn't happen. And I don't think, like, I even had Caglione as an overrated prospect, I think, the last time we did this. And Michael, who's one of our other writers, had a good point, and he said, well, if he's a 40 hit first baseman, then that's completely fine because he has the power, which is completely true. But what I was saying with like his, like the way that he presents himself in the box, like any type of breaking ball that I saw when he was at AFL, he was just going to whiff at it. It's just, that's just what was going to happen. And especially Major League Baseball pitchers are very smart. They will expose you so quickly. So he exactly should stay in Double A and learn the pitching, learn the break, learn all that type of stuff. And then in the end, he should be a really quality hitter for the Royals.
I'm going to bring up one more thing about Cag. Last year, when he was coming through the draft, I remember seeing at least one person, I think multiple people, even comped him to Adam Dunn, which there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Adam Dunn hit 430 career bombs over like, what, 16, 17, actually, I think 14 or 15 seasons. Some of the best power in the game, but he could not hit for contact. And only certain people like us who have really like followed the game for a long time, like, fans have such a crazy expectation about first round picks. They think, oh, he's going to be the face of the franchise. You know, like, there's no way that the hit tool can suck. You know, our team sees, you know, this and this and this in him. It's like, I think that fans develop a very unrealistic expectation, and they're not going to be forgiving if Cags comes up this year and hits like 190. Like, I mean, freaking Aaron Judge hit like under 200 when he first got called up. And it's like, yeah, I mean, Cags easily could have that kind of power. I'm not saying he's Aaron Judge by any means, but it's like, you don't want to rush a guy's development, and you have to have a realistic expectation that every player struggles. So if Cags came up this year, I would almost bank on it that he's going to hit at least under 220.
Yeah, there's a bit of a comp going around, and people are saying he's the left-handed Aaron Judge, which I don't agree with whatsoever.
I don't agree with that either. Judge is at least an athlete, and Cags not.
But
Judge also has.
Go ahead.
Judge also has a crazy hit tool.
Yes.
And he adjusts well in counts, but I do like the Adam Dunn comp very well. Like that's perfect. That's what the Royals need, is a power guy like that. But I do think that Adam Dunn did get on base more than I think Caglione would.
Yeah, he could walk over 100 times. Right now, I would see Cags as more of like a 70 walk guy. season.
Well, right now he's struggling with the walks because I think he's starting to swing earlier in counts now, which
he's trying to be
that's kind of why they're he's like starting to get more hits and stuff, which I hope is something that becomes more of like a thing for him, because I know a lot of power guys do that where they'll start swinging earlier in counts and in the end they get to better pitches to hit. So all right, so now we move on to one of the more entertaining parts of the show that a lot of people would like, especially if you're a card collector or a fantasy person or a dynasty player. We have three sleeper prospects from each of us, and either of you can go first, because you guys, we all have a nice array here of prospects that some of these guys I've never even heard of before. So either one of you can go first.
Adam, you want to take the wheels?
Yeah, sure. To start, I'll go with the Red Sox, Franklin Arias. Here in Boston, you know, you hear a lot about Marcelo Mayer, Christian Campbell, and Roman Anthony as they're labeled the big three. And obviously Kyle Teal was here before he got traded to Chicago. But Franklin Arias, he's a top 100 guy. He is fourth ranked in their system, and he is in the 90 range, I believe, in terms of the prospect ranks in most sites. But actually, he might even have moved up. But the kid can play, and no one seems to really know who he is here. He's 19 years old. He's in low A. The kid can hit. He's got okay power. He's a good fielder. He's a middle infielder. I don't really know if he's going to end up actually playing big league baseball in Boston, which doesn't help his case for why people don't know him around here, because he might be a trade piece. But regardless where he ends up, the kid's going to be a good baseball player. My second one I went with is the D-backs 2024 first round pick in Ryan Waldschmidt. I feel like Waldschmidt doesn't really get enough credit for his bat. He was their comp pick, I believe, at 31. He's got good juice. I believe he's out of Kentucky. Yeah, he's from Kentucky. He's got good power, and I think at Chase Field, the guy's really going to hit. He's nothing special in terms of his fielding. You know, he doesn't have a great arm. He probably plays left field, but his bat is what stands out to me and why I think he's an exciting watch. And my third one I'm going to go with is another 19-year-old from the Dodgers, Eduardo Quintero. He's a former catcher, and they moved him to the outfield. The kid can play kind of all around. He's a good fielder. He can play center. He can play left. He can play right. Great arm. My only question is how he develops into his power bat. He's a decent hit tool, fast runner. But if the kid can get power, he's going to be a really good piece for the Dodgers, another really underrated outfielder they have there.
I couldn't agree with you more on Quintero, because I think last year when I did my list for Complex League for top bats, I think I had him top five, I believe. And he's got bat speed for days, and he finds the barrel well. He'll literally hit to all fields. So you're completely spot on with that hit tool and the power. Like, I think he'll definitely develop some really good gap to gap power, but yeah, no, 100% on Quintero.
Yeah. Even if he's only 175 pounds right now, he's got some more room to add to that frame, add a bit more juice. So ceiling's pretty high there, I think.
All right. Yeah. 100%. Austin, what about you?
Yeah. So my three guys are going to be Vlad's son, Pablo Guerrero, not Vlad Jr., obviously, and then Dylan Drayling, both of the Rangers. And then my last guy will be Peyton Tolley of the Red Sox. So Guerrero, he is not in any top 100 list, and I think he was even left off Baseball America's top 30 for the Rangers system, which to me is pretty wild considering he has plus power. His overall profile reminds me a lot of Eugenio Suarez. I think he's good for 30 bombs every season, some decent doubles power, and he is going to come with some swing and miss. Not the best defender, but I think that there's enough power in his bat that the hit tool will at least play. You know, he might end up like a 45 bat, which is what I have him at. And even then, if you're 45 hit with plus power and you're at least decent defensively, which I think that he's not going to be a great defender, but I think he'll at least, you know, man first base okay, and he can DH whenever, you know, his defense. If his defense doesn't live up to anything, he can always DH. So I think there's enough there in his profile that he will at least be a perennial 30 home run bat. And then Dylan Drayling is a guy who is not on any top 100 lists as well. And he's a guy who I think has a really good hit tool, and he's got some pop, and he's a pretty decent defender as well. Like, I don't think that there's anything super outstanding about Drayling. I just think that he's got a really nice hit tool where he should hit for average. I don't think he's going to strike out a whole lot. I can see him. I could pencil him down for like 25 plus doubles a season. And it kind of feels like, unless you're a Rangers fan or a Tennessee guy, no one is talking about him. And then Peyton Tolley is the last guy. Like I said, he's a Red Sox pitcher, so we both have Red Sox guys at him. And Tolley is a guy who I saw at TCU. He's like mid 90s with his fastball topped out at like 97. He's only a fastball slider for his arsenal, but the induced vertical break on his fastball was insane. Like, the amount of inches that he induced on it was pretty wild. So he gets a lot of whiff that way, and his extension is pretty good in his delivery too. I do think that he should be able to develop a third pitch, especially in Boston's system. So I think that Tolley essentially is not talked about, and I think that he could be a possible back-end guy or like a long relief guy for the Red Sox. And yeah, I think that those are my three sleeper prospects.
I gotta say, Austin, you matched Adam's accent pretty well with that little Boston in you.
Oh, how about that? Do I get my Boston card then?
We'll work on it.
literally, just now you're like Boston. I was like, what the heck is that? Adam talking? Like, where'd that come from? I was like, what? But anyway. My three sleeper prospects are, again, all three guys I've seen through. I believe I saw all three of these guys through rookie ball. One of them is a former Mets prospect traded for Jesse Winker, and that is Hector Rodriguez. And I believe it was Jesse Winker. But Hector Rodriguez, into the Reds, like I said, in a trade. And then I saw him immediately after he got traded in rookie ball. Bat to ball was there. Everything was there. It profiles very well with the bat. And right now he's 20 in double A, and he's like tearing the cover off the ball in double A. And not one person is talking about it. So I'm just like, okay, he's getting the Sol Stewart treatment, which we're not even going to get involved with that because no one talks about Sol Stewart, and he is absolutely a masher. My second is Demetrio Crisantes with the D-backs, and he's another guy hit over power, but the bat to ball is insane with him. And I had him, another guy ranked last year, as one of the best bats that I saw out here. And my final guy is another guy from last year with the Mariners. He's in low A now, but he gets up to 97 on the hill, and his slider is absolutely disgusting. And that's Jeter Martinez. He's a right-handed pitcher. And I think that he could actually form a pretty solid run to the Mariners, especially with their pitching development. So, yeah, Hector Rodriguez of the Reds, Demetrio Crisantes of the D-backs, and Jeter Martinez of the Mariners. Those are my three. I don't know if you guys have seen any of them, but, yeah, if you guys can put in your thoughts.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of Crisantes with the D-backs. He's a pretty solid player. Jeter Martinez, he sounds familiar. I don't know why, but I feel like I've seen a couple of clips of him. And Hector Rodriguez, I cannot say I've seen myself.
Are you thinking of Jeter Downs?
No, definitely not.
I Jeter Martinez was a really hyped up DSL guy, so you probably did see something because he was really hyped up, and then he came to Complex League last year and was another, he had another good year out here, and then he was in low A, or he's in low A now, and he's like one of the Mariners' top guys. So
that must be why. Yeah.
Yeah. He's had a lot of hype around him. Him, it was like him and Feldman were like the main guys out here last
year. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, 100%. So, all you Dynasty guys, listen to us, even though half of you don't. So,
I want
to
add on Austin's list, Dylan Drayling. He played at Tennessee, correct? I'm not.
Yes, he did. He was the second.
Okay, runner. Yeah. Yeah, because I got to see him play a little bit last year, and that guy can hit pretty well. I was kind of surprised he didn't go higher in the draft, to be honest, because he was kind of a beast for him. And Peyton Tolley, you said it is pronounced?
Yep.
Yeah, he's a TCU arm, if I remember correctly. And I remember when he got picked by the Sox, it was a really good pick. A lot of people I knew were pretty happy about it because the guy's a legitimate arm, and the Red Sox system doesn't necessarily have a history of producing great arms. Most of their arms are, you know, from elsewhere, like Crochet. So it's kind of exciting to see them grab an arm like this that could turn out pretty well. And I think he has the tools to really succeed. And I feel like he's kind of a can't bust guy. He might not be, you know, an ace, but I think the guy still has the tools to be a pretty big piece of the rotation in a couple of years down the line.
Yeah, and I think worst comes to worst, like if he doesn't pan out in the rotation, he should be a guy that's good for like 2 to 3 innings out of the pen, and you know, give the other guys some rest. Because yeah, he's only a 2-pitch guy right now, but I could see him. He seems to have the type of work ethic where he should be able to develop a third pitch. Because, like, you know, remember Dahlander out of Tennessee, he was only a fastball slider guy, and he's developed like what, 2 other pitches since then. So I don't
see. Yeah, he's got a couple.
Yeah, I don't see why Tolley wouldn't be the same way. And his velo actually plays up. So I could imagine that the Sox would not only add more velo to him, but because of the way that he throws, like if he's pounding 95, 97, it's going to look like 99, 100 out of the hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be very surprised if they didn't add a third pitch and at least attempt to put him into that rotation, because I think he has the stuff to be a rotation guy if he can pick up a third pitch. Yeah, and as you said, he'd be a great long reliever either way. So
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Oh, great. A freaking fan club is forming. Wonderful. And I don't even know who the heck Peyton Tolley is, because I've never seen him before. So it's like
Peyton Tolley, like, if you're listening to this
at the party, I'm like the one kid at the parties that literally is just in the corner, like, you know, just sitting there vibing while everyone else is talking. It's just like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Weather app warrior over there.
Peyton Tolley, if you're listening to this podcast, I hope you school Drake.
If Peyton Tolley listens to this podcast, I will Venmo you $20, Austin.
All right, I'm going to DM him.
Okay, do it. He's still not going to listen.
Oh, and interesting thing about Tolley, too, he actually hit his first couple years when he was at Wichita State, and he had like 5 at-bats at TCU, too. So I think that he's a huge human being. So, you know, I'm not saying it would work out, but I think that if pitching doesn't happen for him, I think he at least could swing it with the stick for a little bit.
That would be something. 2-way player on the Sox.
Now, I wouldn't go as far to say 2-way player, but I think that minimally he could like have another option to at least stay on the team.
I mean, as long as you don't say he's the next Ohtani, we're fine. I mean,
oh, my God. Will you just get out of here?
All right. Anyway, let's get to the part of the podcast where a lot of people there. This is where the hot takes get, you know, taken up a wee bit. We've had Austin on here talk about Anthony Volpe being overrated. I have said Jack Caglione is overrated. We've talked about Jason Dominguez being overrated. We've talked about so many other guys being really overrated. And literally, here's the part where we get to do underrated, overrated. And which one do we want to do first, underrated or overrated? We want to get it over quick and just tear the Band-Aid off, or do we want to actually, you know, give it time?
Let's do over
under because it's boring.
Oh, all right. We're on opposite ends of the spectrum. All right, Adam, you're new, so we can go with under.
All right. Well, I have two for under. The first one, I feel like he's kind of pushing to the point where he's not that underrated anymore because he started really underrated. I believe I know he was traded from the Cubs to the Dodgers. Zahir Hope, outfielder. I forget what trade it was in. Might have been the Michael Bush trade. Okay, it was the Bush trade. And he's gained a lot of traction over the last year since entering LA system. He kind of does it all. He was a pick out of high school, I believe. Yeah, 2023, 11th rounder out of high school. I mean, if there's not a tool that this guy doesn't have. He can hit. He can put the ball over the wall. He can run relatively well. And he's a good fielder in the outfield. He's kind of a can't-miss guy. A lot of people think this guy is an up-and-coming top 10 prospect. I mean, at the moment, some places have him higher than others. And I agree with that. I think this kid will be in the top 10 of every major source by 2026. And I'm really excited to see what he can do with the Dodgers system because that team just puts out studs like you read about. My second one, I'm going with a J. I believe it's pronounced Aryan Namala or Arjun Namala. I'm not 100% on that. He was our 2023 first rounder, high schooler from Florida. Originally, I didn't know how I felt about the pick in 2023. I hadn't seen a whole lot from him. And at the time, I was still heavy on the Bichette train 2 years ago. But obviously, Bichette's leaving. And Namala has something a lot of Jays guys don't have, and that's a 60-grade power. That team needs power. Their offense is horrible. I don't know how much either of you guys watch the Jays play baseball. It is horrendous to watch them hit. And I'm really looking forward to whenever he gets up. It's not going to be for another 3-4 years. Hopefully a little less. Yeah, I'm excited. You know, the team's found its future shortstop, and he looks pretty damn good so far in the minors this season.
Yeah, one thing to note with Zahir Hope, one of the big reasons why he gained traction was he was one of the younger guys out here for Arizona Fall League, and he absolutely wrecked Arizona Fall League. He was up here with like DeVries and Salas and a lot of other like younger guys that were just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball at times. So that's one reason why he got so much traction was Arizona Fall League. But I also originally had Zahir Hope because I had him, I think, like top three in my listing for Arizona Fall League. So, he is underrated in the sense that people still don't really talk about him too much because, I mean, let's face it, with all the Dodgers stardom that they have, there's not a lot of minor leaguers to talk about. So it's really cool, though, that that you actually put him down because I was going to talk about him. So, but he did a hell of a job with that. Or heck of a job. Excuse my language. Austin, you want to go ahead with your underrated? And I know that you did draft only, so let's hear it.
Yeah, so my underrated is going to be a Dallas Baptist arm. That's going to be Micah Bucknum. He's a guy that transferred over from LSU this last summer, and Ellwanger was predicted to be the Friday night guy for Dallas Baptist, but Bucknum has been so good that he took over the spot, and Ellwanger is now the Saturday guy. Bucknum has 355 pitches and, in my opinion, has above average command as well. I know that for all you statters, the walk ratio isn't that good, but I think that he does a good job of at least throwing strikes and controlling the zone. I think it also gets better over time, and depending on which organization picks him, obviously, I think that it could, you know, it should develop into 55. But what I really like about him is he's 92-96, and he does a good job of at least going six innings, you know, and whenever he's in the sixth, he's still maintaining his velo. It's not dipping down to like 91-93, so he's like 92-96 throughout. The changeup has really good fade, and he can get hitters he generates a lot of ground ball action. He also has a pretty good K rate. It's like 76 strikeouts over 58 innings, something like that. And you know, I think the main takeaway from Bucknum, where I think that he's not getting a lot of draft hype, I think he's a solid day two arm, but he really doesn't have a lot of hype. And I think his fastball can get flat. So I do think that there are some things to work on. But considering he literally like took over Ellinger's spot and he's looking at a day two pick after like not doing much at LSU, I think that this kid should at least make the bigs as at least a reliever. I would say he has a good chance to, I would say, develop into a starting pitcher. I'm kind of uncertain. So I think that's another thing. But yeah, like he has done so good for Dallas Baptist this season. I know the numbers haven't shown it, but if you watch him, like, you know, he has built. So I think that there's a good chance that he's developed as a starter and he makes it in a rotation. And essentially, I don't see him on any lists unless, or at least not any top 100 lists. And I think that he's going to be an early day two pick.
Very interesting stuff. I've never heard of him, but of course he's a Texas guy, so that's why you want to cover him.
He's actually from New Zealand, and he went to high school in British Columbia.
Okay, but he's still going to school in Texas, so that's why you want to cover him.
Yes, obviously.
The kid was born in New Zealand?
Yes, he was.
That's insane.
Yep.
If you can play, they'll find you.
Yep.
That's pretty sweet.
But all that was really interesting. For my underrated, it's a 20-year-old in the Brewers system, and this is a guy that I swear the Brewers do this every year. They find some like draft guy or somebody in the J2 signing period that's like undersized but can just hit the crap out of the ball. And I'm talking about Luis Lora, who is struggling right now in AA, but he's 20 in AA. I got to see him at Arizona Fall League, and that dude is going to be a crazy outfielder. He can play all three outfield positions, the bat to ball. Like I said, hit tools are very important to me. His hit tool is very solid. He does everything right. He has a good arm in right field, because I remember I watched him, and you'd think for his size, he really wouldn't have that good of an arm, but he threw a guy out from right field on a straight line to the plate, which was pretty entertaining to see, especially for a guy which has a really good hit tool such as Luis Lora. I love the swing, nice and simple, and I do believe he's a switch hitter as well, but don't quote me on that. I can't really remember because there were so many switch hitters that I saw at Arizona Fall League, but Luis Lora is my guy, and I know that one of my followers, shout out to him, I need to remember his name, but Spencer, he got me on the Luis Lora train early on in Arizona Fall League. So yeah, that's my pick for underrated. But now we create some fireworks, boys. Austin, I want you to go first because yours is a lot funnier. So go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'm going to piss off a lot of people here. But again, I went with draft only. So my overrated pick is Jace LaViolette. I know we talked about him earlier in this podcast, but just the amount of hype that Jace created going into the season. And I also bought into the hype, even though I saw him live a handful of times in 2024. His power is so immense. Like I said, like he's a legit 70 game power bat for me, 80 raw power. The dude hit 29 home runs last season, and his athleticism is plus. He's a plus runner. He's an average defender in center, but I think he'll be better in right. So, you know, he does have things going for him, but just I know I watched one live game when he was at Sam Houston, and it was something that I saw at that game, but I've watched a handful of streams, and that guy does not make adjustments against breaking pitches. Like, he's not going to expand his zone and chase a lot. And I think that's another thing that people are sold on is like the chase rate for Jace is really good. And a lot of the time too, whenever he does actually expand his zone some, he's so strong that he can hit weaker sliders and get away with it for base hits. But it's like we've said, you put him up against like plus sliders, you know, guys that are know how to pitch and know how to expose you. I feel like the chase rates are going to climb. I literally compared him to Joey Gallo, which there's nothing wrong with that. Gallo hit 40 home runs twice. And I do think that the hit tool will be a little bit better than Gallo, but I think the overall profile fits. But yeah, Jace, he just doesn't make the swing adjustments. He doesn't care about hitting the ball. He just wants to hit the piss out of the ball and or hit the crap out of the ball. He wants to hit the crap out of the ball. And he keeps the same swing every time. So literally anytime you throw a low slider, right now he's so strong and he can at least read somewhat bad sliders. And even if he gets on top of it, he's going to, you know, push it to the outfield. He'll hit a hard ground ball to the outfield. But you throw him against like a 70 slider, a plus slider on a consistent basis, he's going to get fooled every time. Because as good as the SEC is for college, it's still college baseball. And people, I feel like, don't actually understand that. So while the power is really good and his athleticism is going to be enough to carry him to where he's at least an everyday big leaguer for a handful of years, just the main reason why he's a top 10 pick this year is because it is a weaker draft class. And I know I've been going on for a bit about Jace now, but just I feel like he's going to be a good player. I just think that once, especially now, like he broke A&M's home run record. So like that was all over the news and everything. So people are excited for the power and his athleticism. But I think once he's actually picked in the top 10, so this is kind of like a foreshadowing overrated. Like I can imagine like once the pick happens, the analysts are going to compare him to someone crazy and people are going to get super excited. And just Jace to me is a good player, not a great player. I'm done.
Sorry, I was pressing the thing and it wasn't coming up. So yeah, no, that's very interesting. And I know I kind of know all about that because that's all you kind of say to me half the time about this draft class is how bad it is. But Adam, go ahead with your overrated because I think it's really interesting as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, so my overrated is from my Blue Jays. I had to set a stick in system and I went with Ricky Tiedemann. And, you know, initially I wouldn't have put him here, but I'm starting to gain a real frustration with his injuries. He's out for the season already. He had Tommy John some point in the offseason. And I can't consider him to be this big time prospect, this top 100 guy. I don't even know if anyone cites him as a top 100 guy anymore because of the injury, but you know, he was gaining a lot of traction last season in the Blue Jay system, but he didn't do anything for me to really believe he was all that last year. He didn't play that much because of the injury, but there's never really been a time where I felt that good about him in the system besides maybe his first year in 22. Because in 23, he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't throwing a lot of innings. He's never thrown over 80 professional innings. I have no reason to really believe he's going to be the ace of this team. He'll be healthy next year in 2026. He'll make his debut in 2026. But for now, I don't see him as the ace a lot of people thought he would be for Toronto. And that is just why I cannot get behind him as a top 100 guy, because he doesn't throw innings. He doesn't get innings. He's going to be a reliever in a sense because of how little innings he throws. And my hope has kind of gone out the window on him, to be honest.
Wow, that's interesting. That kind of sounds like Daniel Espino at this point. So like a lot of fans they're still holding out a little bit of hope, but the constant injury bug just hitting them. It's the same with Ace Olaise too. Another guy with big potential, but just cannot stay healthy.
Hey, yeah, Ace Olaise is a guy I was wrong on in the 2020 draft. I can tell you that much. Thought that guy was going to be the man.
I think we were all wrong on Ace Olaise.
100%. Yeah, I was too.
Glad it wasn't just me.
Adam, we're going to go from one left-handed pitcher to another. And this is a guy that I know, I don't know is going to be good, but he should be good. And he should be a really good staple in the Cardinals rotation. And Austin has even sold me on him before. I'm talking about Quinn Matthews. And the reason why he's overrated is in the sense that again, what we talked about with Caglione, the same thing with Quinn Matthews. Cardinal fans and media were saying Quinn Matthews should be with the Cardinals in 2025. And the thing is, he's in AAA now. I think he just got injured, but he also is struggling with his control. And it has not been good to start 2025. So all these fans that were clamoring for him to be in the majors, they're looking really bad right now because Quinn Matthews is not, you know, being the pitcher that he's supposed to be. With that being said, I do believe that the stuff is there. He'll be a really solid pitcher. But, like, it's just, can we properly rate guys without, you know, overrating them? Is it possible? Because I know the Cardinals fans do it all the time, and it's like pump the brakes a bit. Like, yes, the stuff is there, but it's just, there's so much more to the entire Quinn Matthews that he's overrated at this point. Like, just let him be him, let him pitch. Don't put, like, I think that somebody put an expectation of him being Clayton Kershaw on there, and I'm like, he's not Kershaw. Nobody's Clayton Kershaw. Like, let's calm that down. So it's just, yeah. But that's why I call him overrated at this point.
I think that's a really interesting one because last year, Quinn Matthews was super underrated coming out of Stanford. And now, yeah, he's deemed the end-all be-all for the Cardinals rotation. But yeah, I really did like him coming out of Stanford. And as you said, you still believe him to be great. And I think he will be too. But yeah, this year's been interesting with how everyone expected him to fit right in spring training. And it just has not been the start to 2025 that really anyone wants. Quinn Matthews and Cardinals fans and I myself who likes him as a pitcher too.
To answer your question about can fans pump the brakes, they do not know how to pump the brakes. But have people forgotten about Tim Hens? Wasn't he supposed to be the guy that was all, you know, the Cardinals, everything?
He's hurt as well. He got hurt as well. But he's another guy. Like I've said before, I'm higher on Tim Hens than I am Quinn Matthews. I think Tim Hens has way better stuff than Quinn Matthews.
Yeah,
but at the same time, he's also injury prone. But Quinn Matthews, I think what happened with Quinn Matthews was even after the time that he spent in college, the Cardinals wanted to give him a break, but he did not want to do it. So, like, what do you have? Didn't he have, like, a 140-pitch, like, no-hitter last year or something like that?
Something like that coming out of, I think it was a Super Regionals or Regionals?
Yeah, he had, like, a 140 complete game or something, and then, like, he still was willing to throw, and I'm like, I love that, but...
You're going to blow your arm out, kid.
Yeah, you need to keep your arm, like... going. So like I think I remember something about the Cardinals like wanting to give him a break, but he didn't want that. So right now, like I do think that the injury is kind of a blessing in disguise so that he can actually like relax his arm a bit and get his mechanics in check and kind of get some of the hype away from him. All right, now Adam, to finish out the podcast, we do a thing here at Prospects Worldwide where any new writer we bring on or anyone new on the podcast, it is their mission to say their top five favorite prospects and why. So to end this podcast, you have the stage to talk about your five. And there's one guy on here that I have seen live and that I am a huge fan of. So go ahead and take the floor.
All righty. Well, I have five. And at the end, I'm going to mention a sixth who I felt didn't quite fit the list. I'm going to go back to Trey Yesevich. You know, as we talked earlier, he's got a pretty high K rate. And although it is at a low level, I do like the stuff he possesses. I think he has the tool to actually be Toronto's ace, unlike Tiedemann, who I mentioned earlier, may not even end up as a piece of the rotation. I was pumped about the pick at the time. He kind of fell to Toronto, I would say. I think some people had him going a little higher. I believe Toronto was able to get him at like, I forget what exact number it was. It was around 20 though. And that was a huge steal in last year's draft in my book. Second on my list is another guy I've already talked about today with Zahir Hope for the Dodgers. Ever since last year, this kid has really skyrocketed. And as I said, I really cannot wait to see how he develops. He's only Drake, help me out. How old is he? 19, 20?
19.
He's 19. And he's already got these tools. I can only imagine how good this kid could be at 22, 23 years old. Along with that, my third one is an 18-year-old. Austin's guy from the Rangers, Sebastian Walcott.
My bad. Hope is 20. My bad.
Hope is 20. Still, Walcott is 18. One thing I think is pretty cool about him is he's from the Bahamas, but that doesn't really matter that much. The kid can flat out hit. He's got some serious power. He can field. I mean, once Seager is too old to play shortstop for the Rangers, it's not that big of a deal because they got this kid. And there is no worry about me or about him in my eyes. Fourth, I have another 2024 first rounder. I have Kalen Culpepper from the Twins. Culpepper is a pretty solid infielder. He's nothing too crazy, but I liked what I saw from him at Kansas State last year. And he's done really well so far in the minors to start 2025. My biggest question for Culpepper is where does he play in that Twins infield? Not that the Twins infield is anything he can't play in. It's more so what position do they put him at, whether it's second, short, or third base. Nonetheless, I think he's a very exciting watch. I think he's a future top 100 prospect. My last but not least is a guy who may never be a top 100 prospect, but that's okay. He's Charles McAdoo from the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays got him last year in a trade at the deadline for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa with the Pirates. I think one for one was a great steal for the Jays. He struggled in AA so far since coming to Toronto after really moving up in the Pirates system in his year he was there, I would say. It was about a year. He tore it up in low A, high A, and even in AA, Altoona for Pittsburgh. And then he struggled since coming to New Hampshire. But McAdoo was a 13th round pick, and he has shown that he is anything but a 13th round pick. Kid's a stud. And I think he could be a serious everyday player in the Blue Jays system or major league team. It just depends, once again, where does he fit in defensively, whether that's third base, left field, right field. That's the biggest question, is what is he defensively to the team? But nonetheless, I like how he hits. I hope to see some improvement at AA because he's struggling at the moment, but I'm not worried about it. And then, as I said, there was one guy who I didn't put in my five favorites because last week I would have. This week I'm not going to because he is now a big leaguer and I would feel like I'm just pulling from what he's done at the big leagues. But I would just like to say I told everyone so. Augustin Ramirez is pretty legit. That kid can really hit. I've never seen a swing so violent and I love it. He is what that Marlins team needs. He is a legitimate power bat, and he can also, he's nothing special behind the plate, but nonetheless, I am hoping to see him succeed there because I think the kid's a stud at the plate.
Yeah, that's very awesome to hear about, because you had a nice wide array, and we've had people come on here and they're like, all the top guys, it's like oh, I like when Julio was still I like Julio Rodriguez, like Adley Rutschman. I'm like, okay, all right, that's kind of sounds like you're just, you know, BSing just to trying to, you know, get your point over. But what I find hilarious, and Austin, you'll find this funny too, don't you find it kind of funny that Adam calls these guys kids and yet Charles McAdoo is older than him?
Yeah, good point there, kid.
I believe three or four out of them are all older than me. I know Walcott's younger than me, but I hope might be older than me. So, yeah.
It's so funny. I feel so old whenever I go to, like, when I was doing my research for rookie ball and they're like 2007. And then I talk to you and you're like, oh, this kid can hit. It's like, this kid's 23 and you're 20.
Like, gotta put my dad voice on, you know?
Yeah, you're making Austin seem old.
Yeah. I just turned 30 the other day. Thanks, man.
All right. I think that's enough prospects overload today. And I did just title this We're finally back and we are going to be podcasting a lot more. It is summertime for us. I'm going to be getting a lot of looks for Complex League. I know Austin has a bunch of stuff planned and Adam does as well. So as always, it's been a pleasure with you guys. If you guys have any plugs you want to do right now, I know Austin, you can just say where they can find you and then if you want to plug anything.
Yeah, you can find me on X at AustinF0421. I just put out like my 10th draft report for my area coverage, and I've got about 20 more to do. It's been a very, very insanely busy spring with all the work and travel that I've done, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
And Adam, you could say where they can find you, Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever you want to plug, and if you have anything in the works.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Aracine57. That would be Aracine 57. I got a couple of reports I'm going to be working on in the next couple of weeks. Coastal Carolina, Clemson, and Northeastern.
Yeah, that'll be really awesome. We look forward to your reports. And as always, I'm Drake Mann. You can follow me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it at this point, because it seems like the name changes every single freaking day. But at DrakeMan4, and obviously I have my Complex League footage and stuff that'll be making its waves soon. So look out on our YouTube channel, Prospects Worldwide, and our Instagram as well, by the same name. And it's been a pleasure, guys. Hope everybody has a great day and a safe time. Whether you're driving while you're listening to this, drive safely. Don't do anything stupid. Austin, I'm looking at you. And have a good day, everybody. Peace.
Peace.